Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 1st, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brian Murphy.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a smallish week this week of news. Not really a ton happened here, but we did have some big things.
Yep.
A couple of notable people in the industry have stepped down from their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
One retiring, one to probably do something else.
Yeah.
For that. We had a big layoff at one of the major companies in the industry. We'll tell you about that. As well as a handful of other things, including a certain company releasing essentially a sequel to one of their most popular games that they released the day of an E3 show several years ago as a mobile game. So we'll tell you all about that. And plus, we'll do a little bit of a holiday release preview here because it's October now. There are a ton of games coming out this month in November.
Yep.
And a few in December, but most of them are concentrated here over the next 2 months.
Mm.
And we'll kind of give you a heads up of what to look out for.
Oh, yeah.
For that stuff. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Paleo Pines this week. This is a new life sim. I forget who made this one in particular. But I believe it is, let me see, it is a $30 game. I got it at a pre-order discount. It's from Maximum Games, and the developer is, trying to check here, Italic Pig. This is, as you can probably guess, like a dinosaur-themed life sim that is pretty neat. There's no combat to this. It's kind of more of your character has been raising this dinosaur. I forget what the specific kind it is. They allude to it being a fairly rare kind, at least in this area. But yeah, it sort of outgrows the home you have, and you sort of get a postcard about this place called Paleo Pines. That seems to be sort of a big whole community around people that raise and study and, you know, try to do a lot of preservation around these dinosaurs. And they all feature real dinosaurs. They may not look super accurate or anything. It's kind of going for a very cutesy art style to it. But it is a very fun game as sort of you get to this ranch that you're taking over and in true, Stardew Valley kind of fashion. It's got a lot of trash all over the place, and there are, I think, three other sections that are sort of blocked off, one by rocks, so you need a dinosaur that can destroy rocks, one that can destroy wood, and one that can destroy like big vines or something like that. I don't know, it's a weird plant thing, but I have the first one, a Styracosaurus, that can destroy rocks. Which, if you don't know those, they look like Stegosauruses. No, Triceratops. But instead of three horns, it just has one and sort of a frill around its head that has a bunch of horns on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's even other variants of that kind of dinosaur there. I've seen actual Triceratops, Stegosauruses. Yeah, a bunch of different kinds. You're going to probably befriend at least one of each kind. You probably want to do multiple if you can. The limitation is that you need dream stones to help them, as they, that's sort of a stone that's in limited quantities that helps them sleep. It's they don't really explain why. It's just like, I don't know, these things help them sleep. And you sort of turn that into like a sleeping area for them as you sort of put some of your materials to that. So you get a lot of your basic types of materials, wood, rock, fiber. You'll get those out of a lot of the trash piles you break up with your main dinosaur that's called Lucky. You can probably change the name whenever, but that's the one that comes in by default. I have a Gallimimus that's good for speed. Dashing around the world there.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. That one can also, they can all help out on the farm. That one essentially takes a big gulp of water and spits it out in your crops.
Mm-hmm.
But not in like a uniform fashion. It's kind of just random chance it'll get, you know, the squares that are nearby, kind of thing. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of farming, and that's, you don't ever eat anything, I don't think.
Yeah.
I have not gotten anything that I could eat and regain stamina, which you use only by doing like farming stuff, as far as I've seen, or sprinting around if you're doing that. But I've got a Gallimimus, and as the dinosaurs do their things, they level up, they get experience out of it. That gives them more stamina to do the stuff that they do, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it works out pretty nice to kind of level them up and get them doing more stuff. And yeah, you kind of go into the town that has a lot of your main merchants, and sort of there's a quest board there. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be randomly generating a lot of quests, just like basic, like, oh, this person needs, you know, 5 pieces of, you know, corn. Or, you know, 8 carrots or whatever. So in my inventory, I've been stocking just some of the basic types of veggies and fruits that people might need. And that saves me a lot of time. Cause the one kind of issue that runs into is just storage, which I think becomes less of an issue as you go along. Because I believe there's a person that does clothing stuff, which the initial stuff they're selling seems to be the other stuff in the character creator that I didn't pick for my character. So you can buy that stuff if you want. But that's not, you know, what I'm looking for. But I've seen people talking about being able to get, you know, a better storage bag for that. You do also have storage at your ranch, which helps out. Because when you do quests and there's rewards, and if it would overfill your inventory, it just goes directly to your ranch's inventory. Though I'm about to fill up the main page. I don't know if I get additional if I go over that. So that's the one thing I'm finding out. But yeah, getting a Styracosaurus, you're just befriending these dinosaurs, which is a little weird dance thing. You have a flute that communicates with them in a weird way, and has it's just one of each of the shoulder and triggers. And they'll do color-coded little bubbles that tell you what notes to hit, and you might have rings around them for holding it for longer, that kind of stuff. So you kind of do that, and once you're able to befriend it, you kind of do this thing of giving them food that either makes them more tired or more energized kind of thing. You're trying to get it into this weird sweet spot on this meter. But then you can like give them a special treat called a poppin' that lets you befriend them, that kind of stuff. So it's not too hard, but it's more about how much room you have back at the ranch to house them. As I have my 3 like regular sized dinosaurs are hanging out in one pen, and they seem to be cool with each other. I had one little one that was very much not cool with crowds, at least with the big ones. So I had to build a separate pen for that one, which works out fine for it. But yeah, story-wise, I had to get the Styracosaurus so I could break some rocks to open up a path to a nearby area called Dapplewood, where a bunch of the people apparently live. So I went over there and checked it out, and there's a lot of cool stuff there. But I haven't had time to do much over there, so I'm kind of just doing a lot of story, you know, like random quest stuff, and chipping away at some of the story stuff, because they have longer term stuff like finding more of the dinosaurs, like the ones that you came to the area with, that are supposedly around, but nobody's been able to find evidence of that kind of thing. So, but otherwise, it's a very fun game, very chill, kind of relaxing, you know. Doing all that kind of fun stuff and just hanging out with dinosaurs, which is pretty cool. So that's Paleo Pines. It's on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. $30. Pretty good time. Then I got another game this week called Pizza Possum that is on everything as well, I believe, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC. It's only $7. with a $10 or 10% discount for the launch period.
Mm.
It is a, they describe it as like an arcadey stealth game as you're a possum that's in this seemingly like Italian style town, like island town. And somebody, the king is having a huge pizza pie made for them.
Mm-hmm.
And being a hungry possum, you want to steal it.
Yeah.
You're kind of going around these different areas of the town, basically eating a bunch of food to fill up a meter that spawns a key that you can use to open up a locked gate to get to another area. It's kind of open-ish like that, but you kind of decide the path you want to get around. Mm. So you kind of want to explore a bit for that stuff. And as you find little burrows for your possum, that's sort of their respawn point. Mm. If you get caught by the numerous dogs that patrol the island. And you got a handful of different kinds. There's like a wolf kind of dog that's very fast to chase you. Mm. But not always great at chasing you.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a bloodhound type that's very much really good at chasing you, but not very fast. And there's a bunch of others that are smaller ones or bigger ones and whatever. You're just trying to jump into bushes as like your safety spot.
Mm-hmm.
To get out of the way. But yeah, along the way, you're kind of running around grabbing food. Pretty easy, just run into it and your character picks it up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be chomping on it for a bit. There's some big food items around, like a giant, you know, fish that's been cooked. And so you just stand near it and chunks of it fly off and you suck them in to chew on them, that kind of stuff. You get fish and cakes and all sorts of treats and foods to you know, chew on and fill up your meter. Your main run, you're going to get up to a certain point where there's a one possum hole that's like maybe three keys away from the end boss.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of have to do that all in one run. And as your runs fail, you take the points you get and it sort of fills up a meter. And as that fills up, it throws a new power up that you can find in the in the maps. Usually just a mystery box around that you just run into to see what's in there. And if you don't like it, you can run back over the item you just had to pick that back up.
Mm-hmm.
I found some good stuff there. There's like energy drinks that get you running fast. There's like traffic signs that you put up when, I guess, dogs are chasing you and they will go around it. So you kind of slow them down that way. The one I really liked is the smoke bombs. As you throw them, they, you know, light up and explode. And in that time, whatever dogs are in that area lose track of you. And so that's a real key thing I found for that last section of the game. Because you can kind of just go around, eat stuff, throw a bomb, take them off your tail, and, you know, hopefully have enough food to rush to the next area. And kind of keep working that. If you get, I think 10 is the max you can have for any of the items. So if you have 10 of those going into that end parts, you're in pretty good shape. So, but yeah, once you steal the pizza and you take the crown from the king, just to make fun of him, it puts you back at the beginning of the game. Again, with the crown, which you can put down on this area where there's some spots for the crowns and sort of the big challenge is to do three consecutive runs through without getting caught, essentially. Or two additional ones. You can get caught as much as you want in that first one, but the next two you need to do without getting caught. So that adds a lot of extra challenge because beating it once is not that hard, especially with these sort of infinite respawns you can get. But it's that extra wrinkle, sort of the big hook of the game, at least from what I've seen so far. Maybe they add more of a challenge to it after that, but that's what it's shown to me so far. And that game's a lot of fun. For $7, it's a very fun time, very silly.
Yeah.
A lot of fun places to explore on the island, and a lot of good challenge. So yeah, I definitely recommend that one if you have a chance to play it. Another game I played is on Game Pass, Cocoon. It's also on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC for $24.99, I believe. This is from Jeppe Carlson, one of the main puzzle designers of Limbo and Inside. He has gone off to his own team and sort of built this sort of mysterious puzzle adventure game where you are this weird bug warrior creature that, as you're wandering around, is essentially picking up these orbs that are representations of these different worlds. You know, initially you just have the one that you are in for a bit, and sort of going around exploring these areas, you know, dealing with the puzzles, though initially you're not really dealing with puzzles, you're just exploring the stuff, but you're kind of going through, and once you have your second world, it's kind of where the puzzle stuff starts picking up, as you can only carry one around, so there's the notion of when you get to a certain point, where you spawn into in those worlds is right next to a place where you can park the other orb. So you're kind of parking them in there, and then you see, like, oh, I have an orange orb with a green one inside. And so you know, like, okay, the green one's in there. Because holding the orange orb has a specific ability to it that lets you get around certain areas a specific way. And the green orb has its own thing as well. And so there's four of them. I've gotten the third, beat the third boss in the game. And yeah, I'm not going to really spoil too much. A lot of it's just puzzle stuff of trying to figure out how things work, how to do things, and dealing with the bosses, which you're not doing any combat to them. You're kind of the first boss, you're essentially dodging its attacks. And then you eventually have a creature show up with an orb that blows up, so you're trying to pick it up at the right time as the boss gets near you and, you know, blow it up kind of thing. So you never have any direct attacks on any of these bosses. It's more of how you use the orbs or whatever shows up in the fight to counter the boss's attacks kind of stuff. And yeah, it's got a really great art style, really great you know, music, great puzzle design. It's not challenging, at least for me, as somebody who plays a lot of puzzle games. It's not that challenging, but it's satisfying to figure out the mechanics and then sort of see how it progresses as you go along. It's really well done for that. It's a pretty simple game. You just have the analog stick and you hit it, the A button to do the thing with the orb. It has an option for accessibility, which just allows you to use either stick for moving around and expands how many buttons you can use for that action, which only goes to the face buttons and the two R1, L1, which I think it should just do triggers while it's at it for that stuff. But other than that, there's no real other options. It's just some audio stuff, I think. But yeah, it's a very good game. I look forward to put some more time into it, try to beat it. It's maybe probably 4 hours at most. I played about 2 hours of it, and I gotten to about 60% of the game completed. It tells you, if you go into the pause menu and hit load, it'll tell you what percentage you've completed. And the neat thing is it essentially lets you rewind to any part of the game as it's showing you like chunks of the game. So that's, you know, there's like one collectible of sorts that I believe leads into potential alternate endings. So if you miss some of that stuff, you have an opportunity to rewind without having to like replay entire chapters or anything. It has a lot of spokes on the wheel that shows the timeline of things of areas you've been to. And so it's a really cool way of doing that stuff. So that's Cocoon. That's definitely worth checking out. It's on Game Pass right now, so worth checking out.
All right.
And the last thing I played that's new is Foam Stars. They have their open beta party going on right now. I was streaming it, but my PS5 kept crashing with the game for some reason. So I ended up stopping with that. But the game itself is pretty neat. It is a third-person shooter multiplayer game based around foam. Sort of with the definite influences of Splatoon, but the way the foam works is very different from Splatoon. Because in Splatoon, you're just painting, inking up areas, and that just is a surface covering, no real volume to it. Whereas here, the foam builds up for your color for that stuff. From what I've seen, the colors don't vary between matches. It might change on depending on match types and all that, but the one they start you with, I forget what it's called. It's like something about being the star, where it's 4v4, and you're sort of going around getting what they call chills on enemies instead of kills, where you essentially shoot them enough, take down their bar, and then they're covered in foam and like a foam ball. And you can use your board that you use to surf on the foam to hit them, and then they roll away. And wherever they hit a wall, they just die there and respawn a few seconds later. And yeah, when you respawn in, you're sort of using your board to, like surf into the map kind of thing. It's a similar style, but you're not really launching into specific parts of the map. But this is only the first mode. I did not get to play the second mode. You have to level up your account to get to that, and I did not in the time I played of it. But that seems like the more traditional, maybe team deathmatch main kind of match thing. But the first one is pretty neat. They had two maps, I think, for that. One that kind of has this. It's all kind of Vegas themed. I think they call it Bath Vegas for this area, because it's all foam stuff. The first one kind of had a big ball rolling around the ring around this map, so that all the foam that would be in there gets destroyed as it goes. So it kind of keeps the foam kind of away for a chunk of the map, as well as providing some cover for it. The second map is kind of more open, with a couple of walls in it and like a big statue in the middle, sort of like a town square kind of thing. Depending on the characters you pick, you have opportunities to potentially build up foam. Some have abilities to destroy foam, that kind of stuff, as well as just attacks that can take out enemies and that kind of stuff. So yeah, some are more defensive or offensive oriented. They do have a big lobby area to jump into, so you can switch between the different characters and try it out, test out their weapons and all that. I did have a weird issue when launching in the maps. I thought I clicked on a character and was, locked in, and then found out, like, no, somebody else got it before you. And so I was just sitting there being an idiot and picked a random character, and I didn't know how to do anything with them. So I had a few issues like that where it's like, be nice to be able to just lock in one of these characters more easily or something. Or maybe have a ranking of like, oh, if this one's not available, go to this one. That kind of stuff. But it had 8 in the beta. All of them seem pretty decent for what they are. It just depends on the styles that works for what you are good at. So, but yeah, seems pretty solid. I don't know. I don't think they've said anything of that this is going to be free to play or paid or whatever. I believe it is PlayStation only. I think it's PS5, PS4. I don't think there's a PC version at the moment. So I would be surprised if it's not on PlayStation Plus at launch. That seems like a thing that they should do for that. So, but yeah, everything about it seems pretty neat. The styles a little bit of the characters and the attitude is kind of a little bit rich playboy, influencer kind of annoying thing to it. That might be just some of the characters that you get. So That's like the only negative I've really had so far. It does have gyro controls. I don't think it's quite like Splatoon's gyro controls, but you maybe tune the sensitivity and all that to make it better. That stuff maybe needs to be tuned a bit more. Your characters move pretty slowly, and like Splatoon, if you're surfing on your team's foam, you're going faster. If you're on your opponent's foam, you're going slower and taking a little bit of damage, kind of stuff. And it seems pretty solid. So I'm curious to see when it comes out or how they're gonna get it out there. So that's Foam Stars. Beta is pretty much over tonight, so not much more opportunity to check it out. And the last game I'm playing some more of is Starfield. I dealt with my issue. I had to figure out where the hell my home planet is, that my dream home is at, and dropped off my contraband there. To deal with that. So that wasn't too bad. Now I'm trying to solve a quest that's just like, go find evidence of a glacial recession thing. And I'm like, I have no clue what that is. I just looked it up before we started recording. It's like, oh, okay, it's on this one planet. Because I thought I just had to go and survey these planets in this one sector, this one system, and like find the one that mysteriously has this thing. But no, you have to go find a specific thing on a planet that it doesn't highlight, just highlights the whole system. So that's weird. But yeah, I got my ship switched up, so all good with the storage now. I got my commerce upgraded, so now I can sell my stuff without having to worry about it counting towards potential upgrades of that skill. So I got a lot of crap to sell and need to find people to sell it to, because they only have like 5,000 credits to their account for some of these places, and that's not enough for what I have to sell to them. So that's where I'm at. So that's been pretty much it for me. So Brandon, how about you?
Well, first and foremost, I put Baldur's Gate 3 to the side for a little while. Not because I got tired of that game or anything, or, you know, just didn't want to play it anymore. Far from it. I love that game, and it's definitely going to be, unless something drastic happens, it's going to be my game of the year, for sure. But the problem is, if you hadn't noticed, I was basically playing that nothing but that game for 2 weeks straight, and I was like, yeah, at some point I'm going to need to put this aside and try some other stuff, because this game is pretty much taking over my life, which is very much a, very much a sort of a good thing to say to Larian, because they made something genuinely amazing. But with that said, I decided I was going to go ahead and boot up Cyberpunk 2077 again. Partly it was because I wanted to see what the game was like after the 2.0 update, and like they definitely did change a lot of things with this new update that at least in their mind is closer to what the game's vision was as they originally showed it to us. The most obvious thing that you'll see right off the bat is that the skill tree is completely redone. They completely gutted it and completely redid the whole thing from top to bottom. And so doing that, they basically refund all of your skill points up to that point and basically tell you, okay, now, these are how the new systems, this is how they work, and this is what you got to do. So it's a lot more intuitive. There's a lot more branching to it. And it's a lot more in sort of, it's a bit closer to like the actual stats in the RPG, but for a video game, there's been some definite graphical upgrades. The cops are much more present than they were originally in the original game. The Night City Police Department was basically isolated to like any crime scene you came across, or if they were like involved in a quest. Here, no, they're everywhere. They're on the streets, they're patrolling, and if you do something stupid, they will track you down and try to either kill or arrest you. And But yeah, so other than that, I also wanted to get the, I wanted to play the Phantom Liberty expansion, which of course was hyped up and everything. But basically what it is it's basically the current president of the NUS, that's the new United States, Rosalind Myers. She is on her like personal transportation vehicle. And then you get a message from a Netrunner named Songbird, who's on board with President Myers. And she's telling you, she tells you somebody has hijacked, you know, the track, the autopilot software, and we are en route to crashing in the middle of Pacifica. And the place they end up crashing into is called Dogtown. It's an area that if you played the game and you'll remember, there was like this whole region of Pacifica that was basically just blocked off. That's Dogtown. It's essentially owned by like a former NUS like troop that decided to just take the place over during the last like unification war. Because now you don't know, the NUS is sort of like the rump state sort of replacement for the old U.S. government, because in cyberpunk lore, the old U.S. government basically collapses in the 90s. And so this is sort of like the remnants of it trying to reclaim a bunch of its lost territory. And it's made some pretty good gains at this point. But the thing is, the NUS is also more or less a dictatorship that's attached at the hip to Militech. So, you know, there's that issue as well. But anyway, so you get there and, you know, they haven't crashed yet. They're en route to it. And you get into Dogtown where you have to basically, like, you know, sneak in. And then you find out that they're basically going to crash in the middle of Dogtown, which is basically, if you've ever seen that movie Escape from New York, it's basically like that. It ends up, you know, the escape pod, you know, leaves for manages to leave. So President Myers is in there and you have to get to it. And then you find out that they actually have something that can deal with the remnant chip that's in your head. The one that, you know, has you with Johnny Silverhand, Keanu Reeves constantly screwing with you, that they can get that out of you if you manage to help them with what they need doing. It involves some things like you have to like awaken some sleeper agents from the old, from like the old unification war and all this stuff. But yeah, it's quite fun, a lot of fun. The old game is starting to show its age a little bit. You know, it's obvious now why they aren't, you know, going any further with this game, and they're just going and working on a full-blown sequel. And speaking of things that have shown their age, Starfield. I've also started Starfield, and first things first, right off the bat, this is literally just Fallout 4 in space. Like, just it's straight up. That's exactly what it is. And it's really obvious at this point that Bethesda just needs to put their house engine to bed and start making something else, because it's really showing its age now. Like, don't get me wrong, the game can still be very pretty, but, like, character interaction and character animation and stuff like that, it's very obvious that this game is essentially built on the guts of Fallout 4. And, yeah, it shows. Like, really does. On top of that, like, as far as, like, the plot is, it became really quick, very obvious. This is Firefly. Literally, this is straight up, like, the plot is a ripoff of Firefly. Like, there was, like, a colony war in the past, the United Republic or whatever is straight up the Union. There's the Alliance of Planets. The Free Star Collective is straight up just the independent systems. The Colony War was the Unification War. It's like, it's not even subtle. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So yeah, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, for me, nothing really has changed from what I said last week. I am still playing the Look for a Car game. And when I'm not doing that, I'm working. So yeah, it's been really busy for me. I have been playing a game. I just can't talk about it until, like, you know, the embargo's up. But yeah, aside from that, like, I've been playing a few things here and there. On the N64, on the NSO, I've been playing Excitebike 64. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I didn't do the tutorial or anything. I just jumped into it, and I was like, okay, I just got my ass handed to me right away. Like, I can't steer. I don't know how to do tricks on the mounds. And like, okay, like, I'm sure this is supposed to be like the original somehow, but like, I'm not feeling it. So I probably will just jump in a tutorial just to figure it out. I have a flight next week, so I figure I'll just do that. I also played Pokemon Stadium 2, which I never played back then because I already had Pokemon Stadium 1 and it didn't seem all that different. But since, you know, battles didn't appeal to me, I went ahead and tried all the mini games. And they're all really fun. Like, you know, a lot of people talk about, or a lot of people will remember how fun the N64 was as far as couch co-op and couch multiplayer goes. And Pokemon Stadium 2 was just totally right up there with, like, how fun things are, even compared to games like Mario Party, which do the same thing. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the mini games there. And then I've also played a little bit of WrestleQuest on my Steam Deck. This is a code that I've gotten like weeks ago, but I haven't had a chance to like really put some real time into it. But from what I've played so far, like the game introduces Macho Man Randy Savage, who's actually in the game, as well as Jake the Snake Roberts. So these are wrestling legends who are actually in there, and they sort of like serve as both trainers and bosses to like really set up the world. And you know, I'm really just like biding time until Mario and Spider-Man 2 come out within a couple weeks. So right now I'm just twiddling my thumbs, but I know that October will get more serious, and once we get there, I'll definitely be more in tune to what I'm doing on my gaming time. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, let's get to some news here. It is a new month, so we have new PlayStation Plus titles for you, for Essential and the other tiers as well. For the monthly games, first up here, big one, less than a year. For this one, the Callisto Protocol for PS5 and PS4 that came out earlier, or no, this was in December last year. Dead Space was January, so less than a year. Good time for it during the Halloween season. These games will be available tomorrow, October 3rd. Not tomorrow, but Tuesday, October 3rd. So that's one you can check out. The game made by at least some of the creative people behind, like creative leads behind Dead Space, and very much shows it, though they, from what I know, made some choices around ways to differ from those games, like a lot more focus on melee attacks and stuff like that, that led to kind of a mixed positive reaction to it. So there you go. You can check out that one. For some spooky times. For some really spooky times, there's Farming Simulator 22, PS5 and PS4. Dealing with the spookiness of, you know, farming capitalism. So there you go for that. You can work on American or European farms, driving around, you know, these big areas outside of your farms. You get like a little town outside of it. Going, you know, buy new machines and such and tools and all that. So there you go. Something to check out if you're looking for something a little bit different from the fall season. And then back to a little more of a spooky game, really like a Weird West for PS5 and PS4. So that is the sort of isometric action RPG. But more of like a spooky Western kind of thing. To it. So, more focus on stealth and lining up good shots and that kind of stuff as you're making your decisions how to take on each of the fights and scenarios you're in. So, there you go. That's your three games. Some good choices. So yeah, there you go. And let's get to some regular news. Bethesda released a new mobile game. And, you know, Fallout Shelter is probably their biggest success in that genre of mobile games based on their properties. They've had Elder Scrolls Blades, which was like you know, an adaptation of the Elder Scrolls combat style mm-hmm. with some little bit of base building stuff, but didn't really do it for anybody. And then they had the card game mm-hmm. for Elder Scrolls that had died a few years ago mm-hmm. because nobody really cared about it.
Yeah.
And now they have a sort of stealth release, a game called The Elder Scrolls Castles. Cool. That is basically Fallout Shelter, but, you know, The Elder Scrolls. Mm-hmm. I started this up a little bit to check it out since still in the tutorial stuff early on. But, yeah, you're playing as this kingdom. Mm-hmm. At least the king is sort of seems to be sleeping around on his wife, the queen. And yeah. she potentially you get a chance to either embrace it or spurn off the other woman mm-hmm. and the king ends up dying in this scenario. And mm-hmm. so you pick the new successor, could be the queen or, you know, other people related to it, even mm-hmm. The woman in the affair mm-hmm. kind of thing. So a few choices on that. It seems like you make choices every so often on things, whether to help other mm-hmm. kingdoms or groups or your own people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that leads into some weird like relationships. You see relationship meters with the different races of Elder mm-hmm. Scrolls,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. So, but along the way, you're getting people that coming into the castle, mm-hmm. You know, that wait outside the door, and you can build up, you know, a cooking station, you know, place for creating wood and other materials and all that kind of stuff. And you, mm-hmm. you know, assign them to those. You can figure out like some have more, you know, higher stats in certain areas that mm-hmm. make them better for different stations, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The thing that kind of sets it differently from Fallout Shelter is that the castle's not, you know, an underground fortress essentially.
Yeah.
Where you have limited space. And so you generally try to, you know, put three of a type of room together to maximize how many people you can get there and the output you get from it and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This one's a little more modular. I don't know how much space you have for the castle itself on a horizontal or vertical level, but they definitely have a whole neat thing there where, you know, you got a little more freedom to design how the space looks. It makes it look really stupid because mm-hmm. no castles actually would be built this way.
Yeah.
So, but it looks neat. It's on Android right now, Google Play,
mm-hmm.
To check out. Not on the iOS App Store yet, but yeah, if you have it on Android, you can check it out and see how it goes. But yeah, the art style is weird because it's kind of more simplistic 3D kind of look to it that doesn't fit at least any of the Elder Scrolls stuff I've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So one negative I have.
I don't know. Like for me, the art style is actually a positive, just because it doesn't look like anything Bethesda has like ever made. Granted, like you know, Fallout Shelter is exactly the same kind of game, and I expect the same kind of a golden path to like play it properly, or as far as like the mobile microtransactions go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, like mobile is really hard for AAA. Publishers and developers to really dive into, but they have had mm-hmm. success with Fallout Shelter, so hopefully Elder Scrolls can do the same thing, but we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's still in kind of an early access period, so nobody knows really what's going on with microtransactions just yet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really seem to have anything set up there just yet,
mm-hmm.
but who knows, you maybe have to play a certain amount before you can even buy that stuff, which
mm-hmm.
might just be more of trying to keep people from spending a ton of money in a game that might change a lot, but who knows. But that's out now. You can check it out. Mm-hmm. Another game I got announced here, Time Spinner 2 Unwoven Dream. This mm-hmm. is a sequel to Time Spinner, which was a kickstarted Castlevania Symphony of the Night
mm-hmm.
style game.
Yep.
Yeah, more so than a Metroid style game.
Mm-hmm.
It very much has the menu style and a lot of the world design and that kind of stuff that, and you know, weapon design and all that kind of stuff that feels like something that you would see in Symphony of the Night with some of the weird weapons, but it's more focused around the time spinner stuff, where the whole mechanic in the original game had you collecting the pieces of this machine that lets you go into different parts of time, usually to stop catastrophes from happening or anything like that. But in that one, you kind of have the evil empire attacking as your character is having a birthday to become, you know, a time spinner, become of age for that, and ends up getting sent through it just before they, you know, destroy the area. So you're kind of rebuilding it in the time that you're in, which I think is in the future a good bit. So you're learning more about story stuff and a lot of the combat stuff, you know, a lot of grinding to increase your health and stats and all that, and getting other weapons as you explore, that kind of stuff. So and you have pets too and all that kind of stuff that follow you around and do damage and all that. So it's a really cool game if you have not checked that one out. They've announced a sequel. They've said no Kickstarter plan for this, but you know, never say never for it. But basically, that the first one did well enough that they have been able to afford to work on the sequel for the past couple of years, and still plan to work on it for a couple more years.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's one to keep an eye on for the future. For that. So yeah, they're just saying consoles and PC, no platforms just yet specifically, but I imagine probably PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and Switch 2 and PC.
Yeah.
There's some older platforms as well, but that's it for the time being. Let's see, another game that got announced here, Tales of the Shire. That is a Lord of the Rings game, life sim based around, you know, the hobbits in the Shire. Supposed to be they call it your cozy hobbit life awaits in Tales of the Shire, a heartwarming new Lord of the Rings game by Weta Workshop and Private Division. Be out next year, so probably not going to have any terrible stuff happening. Probably not. But if it's a hobbit game, there's going to be lots of drinking. Lots of potatoes and parties and fun stuff. So
yeah,
that'd be cool.
Actually feels like legitimately kind of fun. Because I think a lot of way too many of these of the Lord of the Rings games try to go all in on like the battles and stuff, but part of the fun of the Lord of the Rings has always been like the downtime as well. So yeah.
I mean, they did mainly write the books about the big battles and stuff. So yeah, there you go for that. That'll be out next year at some point. No platforms or anything announced, so we'll wait for more concrete details on that. But to a game that is coming out pretty soon, Spider-Man 2, they have announced the accessibility features that'll be in the game. There's a link down towards the bottom to the page on the Insomniac site that goes through everything. If you want to see details, it might be at the top. I forget where I saw the link at, but yeah, it takes you, it's like right around the middle in there, but they have a lot of the stuff that they've had in the last few games they've released, both the Spider-Man games and Ratchet and Clank. So they have things like the combat speed slowdown stuff, so you can slow it down to make the combat easier for people that need it. All that kind of stuff. They have options to skip puzzles if you are not, you know, enjoying that in any way. They got a bunch of UI stuff for mini maps and mission waypoints, text color, icon and prompt size. Hint stuff. A lot of stuff you come to expect with games that do a lot of accessibility stuff here. They do have some neat stuff here for this game. Where is it at here? They have, let's see. Yeah, they have steering assistance for the web swinging. So people that have issues with that, maybe kids, You'll have a better time with that. They have, let's see, they have chase assist, so that chase target's top movement speed is lowered, so there's a longer window before the target escapes. Automatically attaches to the chase target when within range.
Yeah.
And you can press R3 to automatically turn the camera towards the chase target. Stuff like that. They also have stuff for the swinging. So you can have the steering assistance. They have essentially a bar for that, so you can turn it up, turn it down, whatever you want. You can also have some, I believe they have like fall damage as an option in here, so that Spider-Man takes a little bit of damage if he does not do any web swinging or anything to slow his speed or anything. That's an option for let people get the more hardcore swinging experience if they want that. I don't really want that, but that's what... There's a segment of the audience that only played Spider-Man 2 back in the day, and they somehow equated to being like the real Spider-Man game or something. I don't know. But yeah, they have a lot of the same stuff from the previous games, like auto-completing QTEs or... letting you just do holds instead of mashing the button a bunch. A lot of vibration settings, all sorts of stuff. They do have some stuff that's not going to be available at launch. They're planning an update for December 2023, adding a screen reader support to read the text on the screen. Audio description stuff for the subtitles and captions. Some more visual options and high contrast stuff for that. So, yeah. A lot of stuff there. So that's cool. Great to see. And, that'll be out here in a few weeks. So,
yeah.
They do also mention the article that one of their people worked with the access controller team. So they have a good bit of insight on that controller and how it'll work with Spider-Man and all that, so that's pretty cool too. There you go. Let's see, next up here, we got two people leaving their posts that they've had for a while. Hideki Kamiya is leaving Platinum Games.
Yeah.
As of, October 12th will be his final day. He's basically said, that's Platinum's statement. He said, basically on his Twitter, as announced on the official Platinum Games X account, I'll be leaving Platinum Games on October 12th. This came after a lot of consideration based on my own beliefs and was by no means an easy decision to make. I feel this outcome is for the best. I'll continue to create my Hideki Kamiya way. I hope you'll keep your eyes peeled. Which I believe then he did that and then blocked the Platinum Games account.
Which is... pretty, typical for him, yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be an end for a long run for him there. As they founded that studio in 2006. Made games like Bayonetta, Wonderful 101, the TMNT game, Nier Automata, a bunch of stuff. For that, they were essentially the remnants of Clover Studio.
Yeah,
Capcom that made very good games that did not sell, and they went and made their own studio that also made very good games that did not often sell.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been their thing. That's why they've worked on a lot of games then for that. So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what he does next and how that affects what Platinum does in the future. But yeah.
Yeah. Kimmy is definitely I would say it's definitely a huge loss for Platinum. This guy has pretty much defined modern action systems for as long as I've been playing. So I don't know whether there was some stuff going on at Platinum or whether he just wants to do something new. But yeah, he's definitely going to be a hot free agent no matter what he has to wait for.
Yeah, been there for 17 years, founded with Shinji Mikami, who also has left when they... formed Tango Gameworks, so now is left there. So those two are on the free agent list. They might be teaming up again, maybe. I don't know. with Atsushi Inaba, who is the current studio's CEO. So they're in good hands. They got a lot of talented Platinum games.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious to see what he does in the future. So
there
you go for that. Next up is the favorite story of the console warriors. PlayStation CEO Jim Ryan is retiring from PlayStation. Will be retiring as of the end of March 31st, in 6 months. And as of April 1st, Sony Group Corporation President, COO, and CFO Hiroki Totoki reporting to Sony CEO Kenichiro Yoshida. And they will be figuring out, I assume, who the next CEO is going to be for that. But it seems basically to be a retirement. He's been at PlayStation for nearly 30 years and has basically said on his own that living in Europe and running a company that is headquartered in North America, as well as with, significant parts of it in Japan as well, has been difficult to, lead a life and do that stuff, traveling constantly. So he's saying, I believe having been privileged to work on products that have touched millions of lives across the world, PlayStation will always be part of my life. I feel optimistic than ever about the future of SIE. I want to thank Yoshida-san for placing so much trust in me and being an incredibly sensitive and supportive leader. He kind of leaves PlayStation in a pretty good place. The PS5 is doing as well as any PlayStation platform has done up to this point. And they are diversifying themselves pretty well at this point. They've got a bunch of traditional single-player games in the works that they've been releasing over the last few years. And they've got a bunch of live service stuff coming from a bunch of internal and external studios.
Yeah.
And, making a bunch of weird hardware with the remote player, the access controller. They released PSVR 2 earlier this year. A bunch of that stuff. And, managed to weather the pandemic, putting a big hold on production. So the PS5 has been pretty resilient in that. So been a pretty good run for him. Not super long as CEO, 4 or 5 years, something like that. But that's not a bad run for CEOs. You maybe want to have them switching out more often than not to get more, fresh blood and ideas in there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he didn't spend an incredibly long time as CEO. And, we can go on forever about, the job he's done. But, talking strictly from a business standpoint, PlayStation's been number one for the last two generations. That's obviously in this industry. Like I said about, the job that he has done, or even Sean Layden or Jack Trenton before him, PlayStation has, fully immersed itself as a dominant Western power. Before, they were just known to be a huge Japanese conglomerate, and now they're worldwide. They're doing it big, and like he said in his message, he expressed the difficulty of leading the American charge. Yet he was based in the UK, and that's tough, especially if you have to be the front facing guy. And it's funny because most of our quips with him will always be with the fact that he always said the wrong thing. When talking about the lack of a need for backward compatibility, or, not taking a side when it came to Office and gamer toxicity. When you look at the numbers, PlayStation has been awesome. And, I don't know how his successor will do, but I would expect the successor to also be someone with a different business acumen. But what interests me the most is the fact that we've seen PlayStation sort of take a different sort of strategy for the future as far as things like live service games and their studios and whatnot. They've closed Pixel Opus and places like that. So I'm wondering, what they really want to do in the future, knowing that they are number one. How much will they want to innovate, but also at the same time, how much will they keep their identity while they continue to strive for these different kinds of live services? You know, it'll remain to be seen, but as far as I'm concerned, like, he did a solid job. He wasn't my favorite person, but I can't complain about the results.
Yeah.
All
right. He's been a big part of the Sony's European strategy, you know, heading up that part of the company for the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of helped them become a huge stronghold for them in the PS3 generation, where they were struggling in Japan and all that. You know, being a big part of the PS4 renaissance, and, you know, with all their European talent and all that. So, that's a guy who's done a lot at PlayStation for, you know, 30 years here since the PlayStation launched. As a main part of their European side, which they do better in Europe with a lot of their releases than Microsoft tends to try at times, is localization, all that, which makes a big deal for a lot of people when they see that kind of output. So, yeah, there you go for that news. He'll still be around for 6 months, so he did not get forced out or anything. If he was getting forced out, he would not be there past, you know, the announcement of this. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, and like even though it was seemingly abrupt, the timing makes sense because, you know, we're in the middle of the generation. By now, Sony and PlayStation should be working on like PS6 ideas, and, you know, you might as well just go out on top.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. We do have one more bit of Sony news that's weird. This collectible maker called Gaming Heads, based out of Hong Kong, has been, you know, making gaming figures and such for a while. So that's not too surprising. But they announced here with a big tweet letter that saying that, yeah, on this The Last of Us Day, we regret to inform you in the Sony PlayStation collecting community that Sony has told us to destroy all of our Sony PlayStation merchandise, including in-stock items, items ready to ship to you, items in production, and items in development and ready to launch.
Uh-huh.
And they list off, you know, stuff for each of those categories. Yes, this also includes destroying items you paid for and are waiting to ship to you.
Uh-huh.
All our other items, all non-Sony PlayStation items, are fine and not affected by Sony PlayStation's decisions.
Yeah.
And they keep going on for a rant here, saying that, you know, we've worked with Sony PlayStation for more than 10 years to bring you some of the best video game collectibles. And have been trying hard to get them to change their minds, and it keeps going on. Yes, we want to ship your Jack 3, The Last of Us 2, Ellie, and Last of Us Ellie, and Joel, Sly Cooper, and Kratos statues / bust. Gee, but Sony PlayStation does not allow it. Yes, Sony PlayStation has already received royalty payments from you on your orders that Sony PlayStation now wants us to destroy and not ship to you. In this next paragraph, we sincerely apologize if you find yourself in a completely avoidable situation, but please contact Judy Commercial Partnerships at Sony Interactive Entertainment and list their email about your now canceled order, payments, refunds, etc., and what they will do for you. This is the team at Sony PlayStation that requires the destruction of the items you have ordered, paid for, and on which Sony PlayStation has already received royalties from you, but will now not allow us to ship your orders to you. And there's more here, but it's like, all right, wow, this is a hell of a accusation here, with very much a one-sided framing here of this stuff. And in sort of a way that Sony's probably not going to make a statement on this unless Gaming Heads really forces it, but essentially giving out a person at Sony's email address and telling people to send them emails asking for their money back. That kind of stuff where it's like, you are the retailer that has sold these items and not shipped them out. You should be the ones doing the refunds, but... let's see, some of the people that have responded to them here saying, when I pre-ordered the Joel and Ellie statue, that was a transaction with Gaming Heads, not Sony. You need to refund the money we all gave Gaming Heads to produce these products. don't tell us to go to your licensor to get it. That's what you're doing is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Telling customers to contact Sony for refunds and give out Judy's email address seems very shady and unprofessional. Another mm-hmm. one wrote, customers transacted with your company, not the licensor Sony. Mm-hmm. This reeks of fishiness and isn't the whole story here. Customers made business with Gaming Heads, not with Sony, so you guys have to refund. It's as easy as that, another person mm-hmm. wrote. And yeah, more people basically saying a lot of that kind of stuff. And then as they're portraying themselves as the victim here, mm-hmm. I've seen tweets of other people being like, yeah, I ordered stuff from them, you know, X amount of years ago, and they still never shipped it. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it seemed like this company's probably been shady for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe their license with PlayStation ran out, like in the middle of them producing stuff, and they decided to keep going with it.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the exact thing is? This company is clearly not going to admit to any of that. But they seem to be going an interesting approach that is basically a fuck around and find out plan. And right mm-hmm. now they're in the fuck around part of it, telling people that if they want their money back, they need to pester a random person at PlayStation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's, you know, business they're doing with their own company. Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a business tactic there.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a very weird story I've seen. Mm-hmm.
When I first read this, I guess I interpreted it wrong. I thought that people who already had pre-orders in would already just have them refunded and whatnot. I didn't know that people wouldn't be getting their money back and how all the stuff would be destroyed. Mm-hmm. And you know, the latter part of that, like everything being destroyed, is just weird. Like it makes sense from obviously their standpoint, but you know, from Sony's, like I don't know, like what went wild enough for them to want to make that sort of decision, especially knowing that money was already tied in. And like this company makes really, really nice figures. You know, I looked at their inventory and it's really, really nice. Mm. And the funny thing about all this is that now that we know this, the stuff that's already out in the wild is going to be more rare. So yeah, it's a weird situation.
Yeah, and they're deliberately framing this in a certain way that makes it seem like that they have done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there has to have been something.
Yeah. You
know, partners like this don't make these kinds of requests if mm-hmm. you're just being Mr. Nice Guy company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing here. It's like, there's another side to this that, you know, is not being talked about. Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious to see what that is, but we may never get it. But the way that the Gaming Heads here is framing this very much makes it seem like there's
mm-hmm.
there's a reason they got this sort of form letter back. Mm-hmm. And they're just trying to make it seem like it wasn't their fault.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go for that, for some weird internet drama there. But let's get to some real life drama. Epic Games announced that they were releasing or cutting 870 jobs, about 16% of its workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be covering a large part of or a part of pretty much every company they have under their belts. And also part of this is that they are selling off Bandcamp Song Trader. Without the E at the end. Apparently a company that wanted to buy Bandcamp at one point, but Bandcamp did not want to sell to them.
Mm.
So now they've gotten the opportunity to buy them, so that's cool. Their marketing arm, Super Awesome, is also being spun off into an independent company under the same branding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. Seems like trying to get a lot of this superfluous funding stuff out of the mm-hmm. off the books, as well as, you know, getting rid of 870 people's worth of payroll.
Oh, yeah.
As well, though Epic is supposed to have pretty good severance packages, so those people hopefully aren't in too bad of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, basically everybody in the company, every company under Epic Games is losing a number of their people. Mm-hmm. So that's sad to see and annoying, especially because, you know, Fortnite does really well for them. The Unreal Engine stuff does well, but this seems to be, you know, an infinite growth kind of situation where they want to get a little bit more lean so that their books and all that look pretty good for the next, you know, financial report from them. Which is always a shitty situation to be in.
Yeah.
Anybody that works for these kind of big corporations. So yeah, there you go. Some sad news there from Epic. But let's get to the last part of the show here. Smash Pad's holiday release preview. We'll go over the schedule here. We're not going to talk about everything here. In depth, but there's a lot of it. We'll go through a lot of the cooler stuff here for October. We start off here with Disguise 7 happening tomorrow, Monday, October 2nd. So that's another opportunity where they're still kind of using that same art style as 6.
Yeah, they're still using the 3D thing. I'm hoping that they added, they worked on the animation a bit better because, Disguise 6, its animation was just lifeless, to be frank.
Yeah.
Which is not something you should say about a game that was originally all sprites.
Yeah. And hopefully being on a PlayStation, Switch, and PC at launch helps them. Because, you know, being a Switch exclusive, you don't really have too much of a tech budget there for making it look super great if you're not going with the traditional sprite style that they did for every other game before that. But there you go for that. Let's see. We got Lamplighters, the Lamplighters League. That's Xbox and PC on Tuesday, October 3rd. That's a Game Pass game as well. That's the kind of XCOM-ish kind of game, but set in more of a Indiana Jones kind of style of world.
So, yeah.
With a lot of tomb exploring and supernatural stuff and all that. So that looks neat. There's Worldless, which is an indie game that has been getting some buzz here. Had a demo for some of the Steam Next Fest stuff that looks really cool. It's like a Metroid-ish kind of game, I think. They call it Adventure Platformer, which I think is what that means. It has turn-based combat. And that kind of stuff. So that looks neat for a game people should check out. That's on the 4th. Let's see, Assassin's Creed Mirage on the 5th, as well as Wargroove 2. So there's some more games there. And then the 6th, Detective Pikachu Returns and NHL 24. That's all 1 week, 7 games of notes. So some interesting stuff there. Let's see, Forza Motorsport is on October 10th, as well as Long Gone Days and Wild Card Football. Getting you some Long Gone Days is like a RPG game there. Wild Card Football is more of an arcadey football game with the NFL Players Association license. So they have a bunch of real players in there, but no teams. Let's see, October 11th is Honkai Star Rail, finally coming to the PS5. That is another game from the makers of Genshin Impact as a free-to-play, turn-based JRPG style game. So there you go for that. And the 13th of October is Lords of the Fallen. They're making a sequel to Lords of the Fallen called Lords of the Fallen. So there you go. It used to be The Lords of the Fallen, but they said no Lord, no The in the title, but... they're taking some interesting inspirations from, you know, other Souls games and such, and that has some neat mechanics to it, especially some of the, like, chasing after the stuff you've left behind, that kind of stuff.
So
there's some neat stuff there. And that's the second week of October. Third week, we get October 17th, Sonic Superstars and Wizard with a Gun. Some good looking games there. The next day, Devolver Digital has another game coming out, Hellboy Web of Weird. There you go for that. So the 19th is Endless Dungeons, Hot Wheels Unleashed 2, Turbocharged, the Jackbox Party Pack 10, Mail Time. That's a cutesy little game set in the forest where you're a mail carrier of sorts, 3D platformer adventure stuff. That's a neat one. Also on October 19th, World of Horror. It's a game that's based on the style of Junji Ito. It's sort of a turn-based RPG, but not in, you know, like a JRPG fashion or anything. It's kind of more dungeon crawly kind of style, but not, I don't think you're really crawling dungeons, just running through different scenarios that weird, scary shit happens.
Oh, yeah.
And the weird thing is this was on Game Pass in Early Access and is not coming to Xbox.
Yep.
So I don't know what the heck happened there. But something happened. On October 20th is where the two biggest games of the month happened, Marvel's Spider-Man 2 and Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Yeah.
Both exclusives to one platform for that. So that's your third week. A bunch more games there. 10 games there.
Yeah.
And then October ends with Just Dance 2024 edition on October 24th.
Yeah.
There's the Lord of the Rings Return to Moria. It's sort of a survival crafting game of sorts, but not like a first-person one.
Yeah.
It's more like management kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, October 24th is Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 on everything, pretty much.
Yep.
And then, let's see, the 26th is Ghost Runner 2. The 27th is Alan Wake 2.
That's one I'm definitely looking forward to, because I love the first game. First game was amazing. It was also one of the most stressful gaming experiences I've ever had. Because, see, the whole conceit of that game is the enemies that you go up against, before you can actually, like, attack them, you have to, like, shine a flashlight on them until, like, the shadow or whatever that's on them, like, goes away so that you can actually, like, shoot them. And, like, it's you know, like, there. And the only other way you can do it is either flash grenade or, like, getting them, like, underneath a, like a street light or something. And it is, ooh, it is tense. It's fun, but it's tense.
Yeah. But let's see, also coming out, let's see, October 27th is UFC 5, EA's fifth UFC game.
Yep.
Then on October 31st, Halloween, Jusant, which is not a spooky game, at least not from what I played of it. But that is also, it's on PS5, Xbox Series X and S and PC, and that's on Game Pass. So that's October. A lot of stuff there. I think the ones I'm most interested in here, Assassin's Creed Mirage. Let's see, Honkai Star Radial. Wizard with a Gun. I'm trying to see what else here. Mail Time, if I can get some time for that. Marvel Spider-Man 2 is probably the big game.
Yeah.
And maybe Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1, and I'll check out Jusant on Game Pass. So, Brandon, what are you looking forward to in October?
Well, I just told you, Alan Wake 2. That's one of them. Let me see. Definitely also Super Mario Brothers Wonder. That looks like a lot of fun. Let me see. Probably also Wargroove 2, because I really liked the first one. The first one was a lot of fun and actually pretty well written. It had a really nice, you know, art style. And probably, maybe, I say this with a big maybe Metal Gear Solid Master Collection. But that's a big maybe, because I want to see, you know, how it plays first. Because, you know, this is Konami we're talking about. And,
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there you go. The Dan, what are you looking forward to in August or October?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mentioned it earlier. I am really looking forward to both Super Mario Bros. Wonder as well as Marvel Spider-Man 2. The preceding Spider-Man game was my game of the year that year. So looking forward to the sequel. It looks better in just about every aspect. So there's that. But I do want to give a shout out to Sonic Superstars, because that game will probably just fall off the edge of the water, because it's coming out 2 days before these games end. That sucks. And then I also do want to point out Assassin's Creed Mirage. I know a lot of people are tired of Assassin's Creed games, but going back to its roots really means a lot. And I've so far, from what I've heard from people who've previewed it, it's really good. And then the one thing that I totally forgot about was Detective Pikachu Returns. I actually have a pre-order on that, so I'll definitely open that when that comes. But yeah, October is pretty stacked. I also want to point out Wizard with a Gun. That game had one of the longest lines out of all the indies I saw at PAX, and I didn't get to play it. So, you know, hopefully I can get a code for that one and try that one. But yeah, October is stacked, and I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, Wizard with a Gun was a very fun demo. When I played it during the Steam Next Fest stuff, that's one to keep an eye on, too. So yeah, October, pretty good. November's a little bit smaller, but not that much smaller. Let's see here. November 2nd is going to be a big day. My time's at Sandrock. The follow-up to my time's at, I forget what the first game's called. But it's a life sim, 3D life sim, you know, exploring an area, doing, you know, building up your farmhouse and all that.
Yeah.
Doing stuff for people and exploring and fighting enemies in dungeons and that kind of stuff. Another one of those, but pretty good one. That's on everything. November 2nd is RoboCop Rogue City, the new game from the team that made the Terminator game that was pretty good, first-person shooter. So people are looking forward to that one. That's on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Also November 2nd is Star Ocean, the second story R, the sort of remake of the second Star Ocean game.
Yep.
That puts it in more of the style of, you know, the Octopath Traveler and all that. That looks neat. Then also November 2nd is the Talos Principle 2. They just announced that. So you can check that out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S and PC. Then also November 2nd is Thirsty Suitors, which is on everything. And that's the weird adventure, wacky combat game of like a, I forget if you're a woman or a...
You're a woman.
I think you're a woman that's...
Yeah, an Indian woman. Well, a Desi woman, yeah.
Yeah. Who's dealing with the conflict of her family making judgments about potential boyfriends that she is looking to get interested in manifesting those sort of verbal fights in physical ways, very silly and ridiculous ways, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that... a hell of a time to start November. There were three or five big games at November 2nd. November 3rd follows up with Ebenezer and the Invisible World. That's the Metroid style game, but featuring a sequel to A Christmas Story.
Yeah, A Christmas Carol.
A Christmas Carol, sorry. That is a weird thing to do, but it's public domain, so whatever. Essentially, Ebenezer's gone through, you know, the three ghosts of Christmas, past, present, and future, now can see ghosts and is able to take on quests and such with ghosts and fight other ghosts and people and all that. It's weird, but it works pretty well for it. Let's see. We got WRC, the World Rally Championship game, EA's first from Codemasters. It's PS5, Xbox Series X and S. And PC on November 3rd. And also that same day is WarioWare Move It on the Switch. That is the motion-focused WarioWare game. Sort of a pseudo-sequel to the Wii game back in the day. So there you go for that. November 6th is The Invincible. That is the neat game from... I forget what the publisher is.
They were originally...
Focus Entertainment.
Yeah, they were originally with CDR Red. CP, whatever. You know the one.
Yeah.
CD Projekt Red.
Thank you. Jesus, I could not get it out.
Yeah, so that's a neat little first-person adventure game of sorts where you are exploring this supposedly barren planet that finds out that robots have been doing stuff and getting weird.
Yeah. I've read the book that this is based on, so prepare for some mindfuckery. Yeah.
Then let's see. Next up here, Like a Dragon, The Man Who Erased His Name. Or Like a Dragon, Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name, just in case that name couldn't be any longer.
Yeah,
it's out on PlayStation, Xbox, PC, November 9th. That'll also be on Game Pass. Then November 10th, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Yeah, that's the...
They figured out how to get another one out of there.
Somehow.
Because they needed one badly, so they're basically making an expansion for Modern Warfare 2 and just making it the sequel.
Yep.
So there you go for that. Let's see, November 14th, Broken Roads. This is a an isometric, you know, RPG, but like, what's the RPG that has no combat in it that was like Game of the Year territory?
Disco Elysium.
Yeah, they're very much going after that kind of game.
Yeah.
But set in like a post-apocalyptic Australia.
Yeah, so basically just like 1 degree from, you know, regular Australia. But
yeah, like a Mad Max-ish kind of version of that. So
yeah,
that looks neat. That's on everything November 14th.
Mm-hmm.
Also November 14th is Super Crazy Rhythm Castle, the Konami rhythm game.
Yep.
With a lot of like Beimani style to it and songs based on their various games over the years that have had a lot of great music.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided to release it here in the middle of all these games.
Yep.
So that nobody will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So wait until like January and you can probably get it for half off or something.
Yep.
So there you go for that. November 16th, Flashback 2. Mm-hmm. That's finally happening. That's on everything. So you can see the follow-up to Flashback, a game from the 90s PC days. It was also on like Genesis and some other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
There's, let's see, Yohane the Parhelion, Blaze in the Deep Blue. This is based on an anime,
mm-hmm.
But comes from Inti Creates. So they make all the Mega Man-esque games or Castlevania-esque games. This is in the Castlevania realm. So
mm-hmm.
looks really neat if you want one of those kind of games. So that's one to check out. Let's see, on November 17th, there's Naruto Cross Boruto Ultimate Ninja Storms Connections. That takes all the story from Naruto and Boruto and pushes it into one game somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That'll take probably a few hundred hours to beat, but you'll be able to get through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end November pretty much with two more games. There's not really anything after this. Mm-hmm. Persona 5 Tactica on November 17th. Mm-hmm. It's on everything. And Super Mario RPG on the Switch.
Yep.
Also on November 17th. So there's not really anything else releasing that second half of that month.
Not really, no.
So there's a weird little break there of sorts, but there's probably a bunch of smaller indie stuff in there. So, but November's pretty stacked as well. The things I would say I'm most interested in here are probably Thirsty Suitors, Ebenezer and the Invisible World, because that demo's pretty fun for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check Like a Dragon Guide in it on a Game Pass. And maybe Persona 5 Tactica. I've not seen enough of that to know if that's going to be my thing for the tactics style of it, but
yeah,
who knows. I've been playing the Super Nintendo version of Super Mario RPG, which is rough, but pretty solid, but I may just keep playing that instead of getting the new version.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be $60 cheaper.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it for me in November. How about you, Brandon?
Super Mario RPG, first and front, foremost. I am so psyched that they're giving this game some love again. And it's not just going to be like a straight port either. Like, they're actually going back, they're redoing some stuff, they're updating the combat, they're adding new content and stuff, and I want to play that game again. That game plot-wise made absolutely no sense, and yet it didn't need to. Because it was Mario, and it was fun and silly. But definitely also probably Broken Roads as well. I saw the trailer for that, and I was like, yeah, I gotta give this game a shot. The Invincible is also a big definite for me. Because again, I've been kind of looking forward to that game. I hope it's good. For all the thought that's gone into it, I hope it ends up being a good game. And probably also Thirsty Suitors, too. That game's been kind of on my radar, and it's intrigued me, to say the least. But that's pretty much it for me.
All right, how about you, Dan Reb?
Yeah, mine's also going to be Super Mario RPG. Main reason being I've never finished the original. Like, you know, I never owned a Super Nintendo, so there's that. And then there hasn't been a legal version for me to play.
Yeah.
When I played those, you know, unsavory versions, I've always had messed up. And that's a blind spot in my gaming. Aside from that, let's see, my link. Persona 5 Tactica. I tried a little bit of it at PAX, and I didn't really have much of an opinion that I played, but it does sort of the same thing that Persona 5 did, where, you know, it's a turn-based game, but for some reason, like, just the atmosphere and, like, how much you get into it, it makes me feel like it's not turn-based. Like, I can't really explain how that works, but it sort of does the same thing, and that's something I'm trying. And then there's, like, a Dragon guy spending any more than it has to for the remainder of the year. But it is what it is. So, yeah, that's really it. Oh, Star Ocean Second Story R. I'm not going to be getting that day one, but that's also my favorite Star Ocean game. So looking forward to that.
All right. December has 3 games.
Yep.
That's all I could really get of note.
Might as well combine it.
Yeah. December 1st is this Dragon Quest Monsters, The Dark Prince. Mm-hmm. Them doing a new like Monster Collection Dragon Quest game.
Yeah.
So that's on the Switch exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
But for off of the Switch or on everything, SteamWorld Build is also out that day. That is the newest game in the series, where you're essentially building up a mining town, mm-hmm. Of robots and, you know, building out that stuff to appeal to different types of robots and bring them into mm-hmm. the town. And then along the way, you're using those resources mm-hmm. to expand your ability to go mining in the mines below. And then getting the resources there to build up the town above, you know, going back and forth and kind of feeding into the narrative stuff. The demo I played a few months ago was really mm-hmm. good, and kind of the first one of these kind of city builders that I really got into. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. Then the last game here is Avatar Frontiers of Pandora.
Yep.
For the new consoles and PC for December 7th. And that is... Mm-hmm. Basically, what if they made an Avatar game that is Far Cry?
Yep.
They're not making a Far Cry for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So what if Avatar is the Far Cry?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that could work. But also, I don't know how many of the Avatar fandom wants to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to just watching the movies again.
Yeah.
Or whatever, going to the theme park stuff they have for it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's December. The only game I'm really excited for here is SteamWorld Build. That's that'll be on Game Pass as well. So mm-hmm. that's one you can check out pretty easily. That's pretty much it for me. I don't know if either of you have any other interest for these games on December.
Not really. No.
I'm actually really interested in the Avatar game. That was something that really caught my eye when it was at first it didn't look all that polished, but as we saw more and more, it got a little better. My main fear is that it might end up being Far Cry. I have nothing against Far Cry. In fact, I really enjoyed Far Cry 6, which is actually the only Far Cry game I played and finished. I just, you know, hope that it doesn't borrow too much from that. We'll see from there. But, you know, I'm interested in, like, seeing more of that world, like, you know, firsthand. And it looks like they could do it, because Ubisoft is good at that stuff. But again, I just hope it's not another Far Cry.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's your... kind of look at the biggest releases of the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The holiday season, these games aren't going to be all of it, but kind of the biggest stuff that's been set in stone right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be stuff. There's 2 games that got delayed out of this list. City Skylines 2 got delayed to next year, and then I forget what the other one was. But yeah. Games are still getting delayed here weeks ahead of their launch. Anything can happen. We still have some stuff that's supposed to be out this year that hasn't had a date yet, and they are in basically put it out or shut up and tell people to wait until next year
mm-hmm.
kind of territory. So there you go for that stuff. Mm. That's going to do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danver for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about as October threatens to kill us all.
Yep.
And yeah, that's not a euphemism. There's 30 games here that are for the most part at least interesting, and we all have several games that we want to check out
mm-hmm.
in some way. So that's a a big concern. So, yeah. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also griping at how many games are coming out here
over
the next 2 months. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Have a good one. We'll see you next time.